We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey.
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf, here on the We Made This Podcast Network. I've just realised I didn't introduce myself on the last episode, so my name is Mark Adams, hello.
It was only yesterday, so that's okay.
Yeah. And that guy is Colin, and that guy is Carl. Hello, Colin.
Hello.
Hello, Carl.
Hey, up there.
We're doing this magazines again, because Gluttons for Punishment, innit?
Yeah, and this one I've really enjoyed. So,
oh shit, this. Yeah. The podcast about Red Dwarf, right here on the We Made This... Oh, I've done a bad intro.
Go with it, it's fun.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Anyway, you said you were enjoying it. I don't care. We've got seven of these, they know what they're fucking listening to.
I was going
to
say, by day two, if everything's gone completely to shit, then day seven is going to be fantastic.
What it is that I'm such a maverick. Look at me being all mavericky.
It's true, you are dangerous.
I am dangerous. I'm quite excited because you're right, Colin, it is a really good issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Should we talk about it? Issue 9?
I think we should.
Yeah. All right.
Because I've got it here. I've actually got a physical copy of this one because the version on the Internet Archive was blurry as fuck and we couldn't read it. So I bought it off eBay and have scanned it. And hopefully, by the time this episode goes out, we'll have uploaded it in a better quality scan to the Internet Archive, so you guys won't have to suffer in the way that I did.
Yeah. Genuinely, how much did it cost?
Colin's daughter only had to not eat for one day.
Oh, that's okay.
No, it was like £8, so, you know, not too bad.
No, but when you think about it, £8? Eight times what? 18 issues in total? That's suddenly quite a lot of money if you actually want the full collection.
I'm not intending to buy all of them.
No, I'm just saying that if people do want a full collection, they're clearly quite rare if they're going for £8. Don't your music mags go for like about 10p a go?
No.
No, they're expensive too.
It depends on the magazine. Most of them I try and get for less than a fiver, but I had to get an issue of Melody Maker recently that was £12.
Bloody hell.
Daddy, I'm hungry. Shut up. Gotta sit here and bid on this magazine.
For £12, you can get 4 of the 7 Chucky films on DVD off eBay.
They don't really help me doing a podcast about old music magazine CDs as much, though.
Well, yeah, but I don't do a podcast about old magazines.
Yeah, they'll help you with Chucky Vision.
Well, Ian, I understand this track is a good track, but let me talk about something else, and that's Bride of Chucky.
Bride of Chucky is one of the best films of the fucking 90s.
I believe this song was on the soundtrack to Child's Play 3.
Well, the soundtrack to Bride of Chucky is part of what makes Bride of Chucky brilliant, but we're not talking about Chucky, we're talking about the Smegazine. Let's talk about Smegazine issue 9.
Okay.
I might have written it down. Nigel Kitching.
Nigel Kitching. Do you know what he's more famous for?
Oh.
Sonic the Comic.
That's it.
Yeah. Yes. Good grief.
Which co-host on other episodes, Matt, is a big fan of Sonic the Comic, the podcast, which I've not got round to listening to that yet. I do intend to, because I did used to get the comic at about the same sort of time as this. I think it was just a little bit later that it came out, I think.
Sonic the Comic, the podcast, is almost as ludicrous as what we're doing. I approve.
Yes.
It reminds me of when Dave, the channel, first started. It was something like UK TV plus one, no, plus 24 or something like that. It was anything you put on the end of a channel, that's what Dave was actually called before it was Dave. And Sonic the Comic, the podcast, just in that very similar vein for me.
It's not the most convoluted podcast name, because there's a podcast that I really quite enjoy, which is Eddie Hurst's podcast version of Jeff Wayne's musical version of H.G. Wells' literary version of The War of the Worlds via Orson Welles' radio version and Steven Spielberg's film version.
I've seen that on a chart somewhere.
It's great.
Yeah. This is why I love podcasts. It's just, if you can think of something, there'll be a podcast about it.
And if there isn't, Mark will start one.
Exactly.
That is so fucking true as well. I like nuts of cool things, and people should do them, not me.
That's Sonic the Comic, the podcast. I swear, the last time I checked, those episodes are at least 2 hours long.
Yeah.
And like some going into three, which is a lot. That, I mean, I know we talk about stuff, but that is a lot.
We are not the most concise of podcasts, but we were never designed to be the most concise of podcasts. We were designed to talk for fucking years about Red Dwarf, and that is what we're doing. We are exactly what we intended to be. Norman Lovett's on the front as well, because he's being interviewed. There's a promotion about their articles on Red Dwarf USA, and there's a free poster.
Yeah, it's a nice poster. I must admit, when we were talking about the prep for this episode and we said, oh, the scan online is quite rough, and I saw the text on the front cover, I thought it was a 3D issue.
Wow.
And that's why it was looking rough.
Yeah, no, it really isn't. It's just they scanned it during an earthquake.
Did you have your poster on the wall, Colin?
I think I did, yeah. Yeah, because I do really remember that. Because it's a Back to Reality poster with all the characters as their alter egos and the Despair Squid behind them, which you never actually really see in the episode.
It looks painted as well, is it? Was it?
Yeah, it's the same sort of art as some of the earlier covers were.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I think it's the same artist, although the poster isn't in my copy of the magazine, so I couldn't check. But it's still very, very cool.
You paid £8 and you didn't get the fucking poster.
You hardly ever get posters and stuff because people put them up on their walls 30 years ago.
True. Like you did.
Yeah.
First up is the contents page, and after we praised it yesterday, they've really fucking half-assed it today.
Well, they've got a lot to fit in this this issue, so they only tell you about three of the things on the contents page.
Yeah, and so they can fucking fit in an ad.
I was quite interested by this ad, to be fair.
Well, yeah, it was an odd ad. It was for Shadow Maze by Jonathan Wiley, a book.
I thought it was a board game when I first looked at it because of the scan where it says the powerful new fantasy. And then it was only when I got to Now in Paperback that I was like, oh, it's a book and not a game.
So one of the previous specials, we looked at Gappa the Triphibian Monster because there were 6 seconds of footage in Meltdown.
You tenuous motherfucker.
Yeah.
Do you want to read Shadow Maze by Jonathan Wiley and review it on this podcast?
No, that's too tenuous.
I'm having a quick look now to see if I can find this. One episode I would like to do is all the rejected special ideas that Mark has had.
Aren't any.
I'm the fucking showrunner. I don't reject my own ideas, just yours.
I'm sure there's one which was met with a bit of a
all of them were met with that.
I nearly just bought Shadow Maze by mistake.
Brilliant.
But it's 65p on Amazon.
I mean, for 65p, that's a bargain.
Yeah, but it's going to be one of those ones where it's like 65p for the book and then 60 quid for the delivery. But let's go look. Oh, no, I can get one brand new for £150.
Shitty, no.
It came out in October 92 as well, so it was brand new.
Those ones where they put them up for £150 rarely sell for that amount.
Yeah.
They're chancing their arm.
But yeah, no, it's definitely gettable, so I can have it posted to your house, Mark, and we can do a special on it.
Let's not.
For 65p, let's buy one for all of us.
We have talked about this ridiculous book, and indeed the ads, for longer than we normally talk about the ads. The other ads were for Amiga computers, cool, yep, and Superman magazine. No 2000 AD ad.
The Amiga 600 advert, I did need to point out that it's one of its selling features is 1 megabyte of RAM.
Yeah.
Which is... 1 megabyte is... I had a look at how much our episodes are. That's about 1 minute of one of our episodes.
Yeah.
So 1 megabyte, we probably used up more than that talking about that advert for a book.
I love these adverts, though, because one, I used to have an Amiga, so it brings back a lot of memories. And two, it shows artwork from something that you know that that computer hasn't got nowhere near the amount of power. In this case, it's a very nice looking, almost sort of claymation, again, 2000 AD-ish looking sort of space game. Be like, yeah. No way, there's a game on the Amiga 500 that looks like that.
Yeah, that'll be the box art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
I do miss the joystick with the four suction cups that you just stick to your desk and then it stays there for the rest of your life.
Why aren't joysticks a thing anymore?
They're built into gamepads now, aren't they?
They're more thumbsticks, aren't they?
Yeah, that doesn't count as a joystick.
Yeah, no,
this is not a video game podcast. I'm going to be cross. We've talked about fucking Shadow Mage by Jonathan Wiley. We've talked about video games. And but we might as well talk about Superman as well. Superman, shit.
Fuck you. I'm just getting into the mindset of where I was in 1992 when I was reading this, where I would have been playing on my Spectrum using the joystick as my main peripheral.
Yeah, I'd have probably been playing Mega Drive and I had a Mega Drive joystick, which was massive. It was like an arcade joystick.
Yeah.
But to get it slightly back on topic, I was probably making my radio show that I used to make on a tape recorder when I was about 10.
Podcasting for 30 years.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I approve of this. I
had the tapes for it for ages. It had two quote-unquote series. because the first series had one co-host, and then the second series didn't have that co-host, but he turned up one day when I was doing the recording, so we had him do it as he was on location from somewhere else. It had a theme tune and everything. Oh, yeah.
Did it still exist?
No, I used to have the cassettes for it, but I have no idea what I did with them. It even had my mum on it because at one point one of the guys who was as part of it was people talking about nothing, which goes right in with podcasting.
True.
Particularly this one.
Yeah. And at one point one of the lads yells and then it cuts and you can just hear my mum go, "Now you're making far too much noise. You need to keep it down." And then I'm really sorry. I'm sorry. And then it just cuts straight back to, "All right." Yeah.
So anyway, Quig shows up.
Yes, comic strip. Comic strip is up first. Flashback featuring, and it's the cat, but that's crossed out, Dwayne Dibley. And it is the same artist as the magazine's cover, Nigel Kitching. And yeah, it's a really, really fun sequel to Back to Reality.
Yes. Mm.
They do it a couple of times in this magazine. They carry on the Back to Reality.
Yeah.
And where they went from in this. And every time they do, it's always good.
Yeah. Mm. I love the artwork in this. The colours are so bright and vibrant.
Yeah.
And there's panels from this that have stuck in my head forever since I read it. There's a bit where the doctors turn up.
Yeah.
Dr. Maxwell, Dr. Pension, and Dr. Fund. So that's a fucking dated joke.
Yeah. I mean, again, we talked last issue about the appropriateness of the Mr. Flibble comic book. That's obviously, it's not a sex joke, but it's a really adult joke.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Private Eye level, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's grim as well, because, you know, a lot of people fucking lost their pension.
Yeah. That particular picture I've always had stuck in my head because it's such brilliant artwork. Yeah. I'll take a picture of it. We'll put it up on the Twitter.
And yeah, the artwork is sublime.
It's interesting as well in terms of story, in that basically in this, the cat starts believing he's Dwayne Dibley again after he messes up his hair. And the fact that it's mentioned in there that Lister says he's doing it again. Just this slightly darker element we've never seen in the episodes of cat has these flashbacks and relapses into Dibbliness and tries to kill himself, seemingly on the reg.
Luckily, yeah. With a herring.
Yeah.
When you think about it, though, the events of Back to Reality would be incredibly traumatizing for people.
Yeah.
It's fascinating that they explore that in the comic book.
Yeah, it's also kind of interesting. I'd like the scene where Holly starts as Holly and then turns into the nurse.
Yes. Mm.
It's quite nice that Holly gets a bit more to do in the comics.
Always.
Yeah.
I mean, that's following on from the previous issue where all the fans were saying that they wanted Holly to do more.
I think that they're very fond of Hattie Heyridge and Holly in the comic book more than the writers are at this point.
Yeah.
And I like to say there's bits in the little subtle bits where they're talking, where Dibley's talking to his doctor and he sort of thinks that they're going to just pin it on him again, that he shot everybody else and framed them and he survived, you know, that kind of thing. And there's a joke in there that a bullet got stuck in Rimmer's head because he was too thick.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really well thought out stuff by people clearly very knowledgeable about that particular episode, let alone the whole series of Red Dwarf. It's a really, really nicely done little short story. I was blown away by it.
Yeah. The names of the weapons that in his fantasy they use on him as well. The genitometer with non-slip rubber handles and the nipplematic with rotating blades.
Next up is the Red Dwarf USA review, and holy fucking shit, it's scathing.
Yeah.
I think to set the scene, there's a Rob Grant quote that it starts with that is just
telling.
It's very fucking telling. It's so unusual for English writers to be asked to run a show in America, and we were very keen to make it possible. But the implication over there is not let's make good television, it's let's get rich. And they all gave each other high fives after the reading and said, let's get rich, we're all going to get rich. This is going to be a truly rich-making program. And Doug and I were looking at each other and thinking, it's shit.
Yes, and it doesn't get any kinder after that. And, you know, Carl and I did the episode covering Red Dwarf USA and the Red Dwarf USA kind of second pitch thing. Mm-hmm. And even at the time in 1992, the reviewer here said pretty much exactly the same that we said, that it's almost has no redeeming features whatsoever.
Yeah. Jane Killick, again, she's got a quote in there that if the people involved in the American pilot were born with any imagination or talent, they evidently left it on the bus on the way to the studio.
Yeah. It's savage. And yeah. I mean, I know we weren't kind, but one thing I'd learned that I didn't know was that piece of shit cost $1.5 million.
Yeah.
In 1992.
Which is ridiculous.
So didn't Robert Llewellyn state, I think it's on one of the extras on a DVD, he got paid like $40,000 or something like that for it, for a week's work. So it was something after. So they were just throwing money at it, and that's what they came out with.
Americans are crazy, man.
There's a bit in the article where they're talking about how it's not, there's no characters, there's just people there. If you get what I mean, it's sort of
there's nothing to sort of like build on, just the surface level thing, is there?
Yeah, and they're talking about, imagine if they made Steptoe and Son, where Steptoe wasn't a dirty old man, or Only Fools and Horses, where Del wasn't Del.
Yeah,
but they did try and do Only Fools and Horses. I looked it up. They tried to do it in 2012 with John Leguizamo.
What?
Luigi?
Yeah. John Leguizamo and Christopher Lloyd was granddad.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And it had a very similar thing to this in that they made two pilots, and I think it was the same network, dropped both of them. And I'm pretty sure that Steptoe and Son is a version of, oh, I can't remember what it's called now, but it'll hit me in a minute. But there's an American one which is essentially Steptoe and Son, or the other way around. I can't remember. Sanford and Son.
I've heard of that, but I've never seen it. So
yeah, it's the same thing.
Is The Office the only comedy program that has successfully gone across the Atlantic that way?
I mean, it's not a comedy program, but the American Queer as Folk was quite good.
Yeah, I think there's a few other type of programs that have made it across, but I don't think there's any other sitcoms as far as I know. Yeah. There probably will be. It's just the only one I can think of is The Office, which obviously was very successful. One thing I did learn from this, I don't know if you mentioned it when you did the specials on it a while ago, the original American cat was Hinton Battle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's the jazz demon in Once More with Feeling, the Buffy episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
You did mention that, yeah.
I did mention that, yeah.
But yeah, looking here, Sanford and Son is based on Steptoe and Son, and that right. did last a good few years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I can't think of any recently that have been switched over and actually done well.
Mm. Next up is news from The Dwarf, and it's got information about Series 6, the omnibus version of the book, the talking book, which... So I went to my little What's It converter again. The talking book in 1992 was on offer for £19.99. In real modern money, the offer price was £42.
Yeah.
Oof.
Your fucking Audible is £7 a month.
Yeah. We didn't have the full, what was it, 6-tape version? 6 or 8.
And that's tapes. It. Fucking tape. Wasn't yeah. even CD.
Yeah, it was tape. We had the abridged version, which was 2 cassettes.
Yeah, I had that one.
Because I remember listening to that on car journeys to me nans in Wales. The couple of bits that I really picked up on in the news from The Dwarf this month is there's a bit talking about a potential graphic novel.
Didn't happen.
Obviously didn't happen, but that was so good, particularly with how good the original comic strips have been in the magazines. And there's a bit about, look out for a rather scary program on Halloween night starring Craig Charles.
Ghostwatch.
It's Ghostwatch. Yeah.
It does make me think that they blatantly ran into Craig Charles and asked him what he was up to.
Yes, because half of the news is what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we are going to cover Cyberzone as a special at some point on this podcast.
Oh,
and that was advertised. But we've already done Ghostwatch on one of my other podcasts, Right in the Childhood. That was our Halloween special where I watched that with Fraser and, well, it's already up by the time this episode goes up. Fraser hated it and said it was shit and I was heartbroken.
Fraser left the country.
Fraser can fuck right off. Ghostwatch is ace.
I do like as well that they talk about in this that he might be going into, he might appear in a sitcom in America. And
didn't
he,
happen.
It doesn't happen. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't.
There's a lot of didn't happen in this actually.
It's just the fact that Craig Charles comes out and says, I don't trust the Americans.
I mean, he's seen what they did to Robert Llewellyn. That's fair.
That yeah, might true. Be why it didn't happen.
Yeah. He does turn up in a few American bits, though. I think, isn't he? No, that's Australian. He turned up. Remember Lex?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in that. He turns up.
Is he?
That. Yeah.
They also talk about OOEU, which didn't happen either.
Mm.
Yes. The OOEU dimension. Comedy version of the Twilight Zone that Rob Grant and Doug Naylor were vaguely working on.
Well, I can imagine that this was probably going into the time when they started falling out, wasn't it? We're just on, yeah. We're just coming on 6. So yeah. after that, but they did do the 10 percenters, which is on. I think it's on YouTube somewhere.
What's the 10 percenters?
It's a sitcom that they wrote about showbiz agents.
Okay,
and it's not too bad. It's very 90s, but it's the one where it's the one that they talk about where they're talking about doing a sitcom and this was when like Rob wanted to write one episode and he thought Doug should write one episode, not writing together, and it's kind of what came out as they were breaking up.
Yeah,
yeah, but it's not too bad. As I say, there's a few episodes online. I watched them one day out of boredom, and there's a couple of good gags in it, but it's still of its time. Not in an ick way, just in a fashion way as well.
Right. I mean, we could do a special on it if you think it's worth it.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, I'm up for that.
Right. What am I doing? More fucking podcasts.
More work.
Just as you're starting to do more work again.
In it. Next up is Rimmer's Diaries again, and... It's just fucking odd. It reads like you're listening to one half of a phone call.
Yeah.
I do like the picture of an android traffic cop that is blatantly RoboCop.
It's definitely RoboCop.
Robot cop.
Yes. Robot cop.
I couldn't get my head round when it was set, because the way he was talking made me think kind of like Series 2 Rimmer, but then he references Crichton.
Yeah.
So definitely not Series 2.
Yeah. No.
It's a weird one. It kind of makes me feel like it somebody wrote it unprompted and then brought it in.
Mm.
And said, I've done this, and they've read it and gone, that'll fill a couple of pages, and then contacted. To be fair, the art on it's quite nice.
Yeah, it is. There's the deep knowledge of the program. They reference one of the dates is Geldof the 19th, which made me smile.
Yes. But
yeah, I don't know. It just feels like maybe as an audio with the actual actors, it might have worked a bit better than it does.
I mean, it builds to a thing like he puts the cat's suits in a garbage pod, and then he realizes his medals are in the cat's suits. That he's about to evacuate into space. Yeah. It's weird because, like you say, it probably would work as audio, maybe for the website if they got Chris Barry to do it. Or I know recently there was an audio book out for Twin Peaks, and it's just Kyle MacLachlan doing messages to his receptionist.
Okay,
he mentions her all the time, but you don't see her. I don't think until like the new series that came out. And it's just all of him talking about all the things he's discovered in Twin Peaks.
That's cool.
Yeah. I can't remember what it's called, like Dear Diane or something like that. I think it's on Audible. Yeah, but it's just like a weird sort of spin-off of... It doesn't take away from the main continuity, but it kind of adds to it a little bit, but in a harmless way. And I think this is kind of like that, but it just goes on a bit.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's not a highlight of the issue. Whereas there are other bits that definitely are.
Next up is Lister's job application. It's an obvious thing. It's unoriginal, but I laughed.
My favourite bit was, so it's just a job application form where he's filled it out with, you know, really obvious stuff like sex, if available, and
yeah.
You know, the normal sort of schoolboy kind of things. But then towards the end, there's, I declare the above information is true. Signed by... No, it isn't. Trick question, eh?
There's also a page 3 ref, which really does date it.
It does.
Page 3.
That sounded like you were really, really reminiscing about page 3, which, considering it's you out of all three of us...
I used to pretend that page 3 was great so that I could hide that I was gay. For our non-British listeners, page 3 was a lady with a tits out on the third page of the Sun newspaper.
Yeah. They used to have page 5, didn't they, which had men on it?
Did they?
Yeah, I'm sure. I think the only reason I know this is because I was reading a thing about Sean Bean. And he was like the first page 5 guy.
I mean, to be fair, the Sun never prints any actual news. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Next up is the Norman Lovett interview.
Yeah.
And it starts with an unprovoked Scottish tightness stereotype, which I was like, wow. But yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? And they don't pull their punches. The first question is, why'd you leave Red Dwarf?
Yeah.
Well, it's the obvious question to ask at this point, isn't it? Because it hadn't really been talked about at any point. But he doesn't come across very well, I don't think.
No, he comes across very bitter. He doesn't pull his punches and he throws Paul Jackson under a bus.
Yeah, and he's the whole way through, there's so many references to his own new series it's going to be his big chance and he's going to make it big and it's going to be amazing. And that was I Love It, which had one series and never anymore, unfortunately. Which I don't remember ever watching. I think we've got it down as a special at some point.
We do. Of course we do. But there is some really interesting information. Like, he applied for Rimmer.
Yes. Did you see who else applied for Rimmer?
Go on.
The third person that applied was Alfred Molina.
Mm.
As in...
Yes.
Doc Ock.
Doc Ock.
Yeah. And, you know, neither Alfred Molina nor Norman Lovett would have been right for the part of Arnold Rimmer.
Yeah.
But that's fascinating, isn't it?
Do you know what would have been fun? Is if they'd announced the American one and Alfred Molina went over and got the part of Rimmer in the American one.
Brilliant. I think I did know it, but this would have been new information, I think, for people reading it at the time. Holly was originally just a voiceover, and it was Norman Lovett that convinced them to put his face on screen.
Yeah, see, I knew that that was the original plan, but what I didn't know until reading this interview, or rereading this interview, was that they actually filmed the first two episodes without him being there, and then had to reshoot all the Holly bits, because he was just a voiceover for the first two episodes. But there's the bit that we've just sort of talked about where he auditioned for Rimmer. It seems like he's got absolute fucking contempt for Red Dwarf, because he says, "I went along for one of the main parts, actually, but I didn't get the job. I can't remember which one." And then they say, "Rimmer?" And he's like, "Yeah, it was Chris Barry's part. I couldn't have played the slob. Craig did a slob because, you know, he's not far away from one. He's like that, smoking and all that." And it's like, oh, I don't know the names of the characters of the series that I've been in for a few years.
Yeah, that I'm annoyed that I'm not in anymore.
Yeah.
And he's clearly resentful of Hattie. He's trying to phrase himself a little bit nicely, but doesn't manage it. There's some interesting information here, but you're right. He does come across as a bit of a dick.
Yeah, which I was really disappointed by.
I still think it's a fascinating interview, but maybe not for the right reasons.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't come across as completely unlikable as the David Ross interview was.
No.
Whereas he was just fucking horrendous. But I did find it quite disappointing to read this, and I'm sure a lot of people will have done it. I don't remember thinking that at the time, although at that particular time I maybe possibly wasn't that interested in reading this interview because I hadn't got the first two series on video yet. So I wouldn't necessarily know who he was.
No, I'd say for me it was, I think I've said this before, it was Hattie Heyridge from the off, so it was weird seeing Norman Lovett.
It's interesting that this is not the impression I got of Norman Lovett when he was at the Hollyhop convention. He is clearly mellowed and got a bit of perspective as he's got older, because he wasn't a bitter old man. He was really quite adorable. So this is a snippet of time, really, I think.
Exactly. It's nearly 30 years ago, so we can't in any way judge him now.
I still judge David Ross, though.
Yeah, so do I. He's not as important. We are hypocrites.
We've seen Norman Lovett on DVDs and stuff talk about how, I think there's even like there's a clip of him on like a radio show where he confronts Doug Naylor and Rob Grant. He's like, why am I not on it anymore? And he's kind of half joking. But I get the feeling that they had to talk it out to get him back.
They must have done.
Yeah.
Next up is the next installment of Androids, which is, I can't decide if it's great or not.
This one isn't, I don't think. This one is disjointed and all over the place.
I think that's deliberate, though, isn't it? Trying to get the kind of terrible soap opera vibe like fucking Sunset Beach, where it doesn't make any fucking sense. Is that what they're trying to do?
Could be. This one, the next is next. Home Android away. I love those bits.
It does have a fun line which is, yeah, discovering my groinal socket was the best thing ever.
I mean, we've all been there. Possibly me more than most. Moving on. Next up is the profile of Rimmer, and it gives you quite a list of interesting known aliases that were mean things that the rest of the crew have said about him. And there's some quite deep references, like that he did a film course and stuff like that. But it just...
It's more of the same as the other ones. But luckily, they're going to run out of those soon, so we'll get something new.
Yep.
I hope so.
Next up is the Holograms, which in my notes I've written unfunny kayfabe, sycophancy, and a fake Kachansky letter. Mm-hmm. I've not enjoyed the letter section for a while now.
Right, no, you might need to explain to some of the listeners what you mean by unfunny kayfabe, because I only know it from looking up what kayfabe was when I was talking about Manowar on a Weirdig Music episode.
Okay, so kayfabe is originally a term that's come from wrestling, but it's become more of a TV trope as well, where it means keeping it in character in front of the fans.
Yeah,
yeah. It's pig Latin for be fake.
Yeah.
Ah, I didn't know that. Cool. Yeah, it's there's a bit on there about the somebody looking through their TV guide and finding a film called The Admirable Crichton and asking if that's where Crichton got his name from, which it was. So that's quite cool. But yeah, you've got Christine Kachansky, probably not that one, writing in about absolutely hating the Ace from a Space Adventure strip, which I don't remember it being that bad. But yeah, it did have a bit of a dodgy ending, I remember thinking.
Yeah, just the whole... I don't trust that any of these are real letters.
No.
Next up is the next issue advert, which tells you that they're doing a Red Dwarf USA comic strip, which I don't know whether I'm looking forward to one or not.
I really am.
With how they have been towards the Red Dwarf USA thing, I think that's going to be interesting.
I think we can expect savagery.
Yes.
They're also doing a Howard Goodall interview, a survey results, which they promised in this issue,
yes,
and comics on Jake Bullitt and more androids. The Howard Goodall thing is, I mean, it makes sense, but yeah, I suppose the last time we had an interview with someone who wasn't a cast member, it was the best thing we've had. So let's see what it's like with him.
Yeah, I mean, he Howard Goodall did all the other bits of music as well. So the bits obviously Tongue Tied, but also Rasta Billy Skank and stuff like that when you occasionally hear it, and Smeggin' the Heads and stuff like that. So that it's not just the theme tune.
You mean he created Om?
I believe that he did, yes.
Om.
And if you don't like it, you're crypto-fascist.
It's true. Next up is the comic strip, another comic strip. It's called In Living Memory, and it's confirmation that it's all original comic strips going forward, as far as I'm concerned. I would have expected the next episode from series one, and they didn't do it.
Balance of Power, I think, was next.
Yeah, which they didn't do.
I'm glad.
Me too!
it was getting close to when the VHS release was going to be coming out. Because this was September, was it? And they were out by Christmas. So people were going to have been able to watch them by that point. Yeah. So they weren't needed as much. And if they can use that space by writing original stories, that's fucking brilliant. Because they're always, well, most of the time, they've been so much better.
Yeah.
What I quite liked on this is there's a nice little bit of continuity within this issue. Because this starts out, Holly's log, 14th of Geldof. After all this time, we finally found a planet with signs of civilization on it. Rimmer's been convinced that there's aliens about since his pen went missing last Wednesday, which is what he's talking about in Rimmer's diary, which was the 18th of Geldof was the end of that.
Good grief.
So they're connected.
Well spotted.
Yeah.
Huh.
I like the fact, I kind of like and dislike the fact that they've gone, oh, this planet we're landing on. Oh, this place was built by the cat people. And it just kind of, yeah, and that's it, really.
So, Carl, you've seen Promised Land.
Yes.
Is this like Promised Land? Is this what we see in Promised Land?
No.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, it seems like they're going to expand on the history of the cat people and stuff. And then they really don't.
Yeah, it felt like that they could have put, for this story, they could have put anybody. They could have said anything, but they decided to say the cat people.
It is a bit of a fucking tease, considering it's something that fans have wanted to see.
Yeah. It did have a couple of quite cool bits in there, because it's basically they find a weird chair with a helmet on it that is a some sort of memory machine, which basically whatever you can think of will appear. And then obviously the cat sits in it and he thinks of a mirror, but it's not just any mirror. Anybody that looks in the mirror will see the cat.
Which is brilliant.
But then Lister's going to have a go and obviously try and bring back Kachansky. Although, first of all, he comes up with Peterson, which is quite nice. It's like he misses his mates. That's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, he sits in the chair, gets ready to sort of think about Kachansky. And Holly, in an absolute genius bit of Holly, says, make sure you don't think about any six-eyed, carnivorous, raging swamp beasts. And then one appears.
And we get a cliffhanger, which we haven't had on an original script before.
Yes, I don't think it gets continued, though. I think it's just a...
Does it not?
No.
Love that.
And it's a great picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This feels like it could have been an episode, actually.
Yeah, there's been a couple of these where it's felt like we could have made an episode out of this, but it's probably a bit too expensive.
Whereas a lot of the other original stuff have been like self-contained short stories. This feels like it could be the first 10 minutes of an episode.
Yeah, definitely.
Next up is Red Dwarf USA, The American Dream. And it's basically the memoirs of Rob Grant and Doug Naylor. And what I read is basically the plot of Episodes starring Tamsin Grieg. If you haven't seen the sitcom Episodes, it's about two British writers who move to America because they are offered a lot of money to write their sitcom, but for an American audience. And it is absolutely shat on from a great height. Their kind of fat old professor is replaced by Matt LeBlanc. And it's so good and so cringe funny. And honestly, I swear the writers of Episodes must have read this fucking article.
Almost certainly, or at least will have done research on British comedy programs going over to America and the disasters that have happened. Yeah, he's talking about basically they wanted it to be dudes in space and they wanted to play down the sci-fi. They didn't understand split screen, which gets used loads in Red Dwarf. And they said one of the reason the point that they realised that everything was going to go wrong was when they referred to the light bee as a gizmo.
It just seems like they had an absolutely horrible experience where they were just dealing with nothing but egos and incompetence.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got Craig and Chris playing the leads, then you've got Robert Llewellyn, and then you go, I can't cope with this, I'm going to have a cup of coffee, and then the Mars bars are called Milky Ways, and the Milky Ways are called Mars bars, and you just think, oh, I'm in a parallel universe. But I do like that they sum it up with, after being rejected, they said, I wouldn't be shocked if Universal just came out with Dudes in Space.
Yeah.
In the future.
And some of the changes that they detail that they wanted to do with it. It was only set a few hundred years in the future, so they weren't too far away from Earth and they would occasionally be able to contact Earth.
Fuck off.
There was going to be no cat in one of the rewrites. There was going a woman called Veronica instead, who was very issue-orientated.
Oh.
And Lister's basic mission was to get babes.
See, that one you can't really moan too much about because that was Kirk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And kind of Lister as well.
Yeah.
He was a horny man and so was the cat. We can't deny that.
There's something to be said when we get the thing uploaded on there, there is a picture of Craig Bierko in this article, and it has to be said, he is a damn good looking man.
He fucking smoulders, mate.
Yeah. Why he wasn't bigger, I've no idea. It sounds like his agent must have just kept sending him to the wrong thing, like Red Dwarf USA.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is possible that he was a terrible, terrible actor. Yeah. You know, looks aren't everything.
No. He's in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and he's quite good in that, but he is basically Confidence from Confidence and Paranoia in that. Like, you could have put Greg Ferguson in that role, and he would have just had to do the same character.
Amazing. And the final page is, well, it's Norman Lovett as Holly. Another hot as fuck pin-up for you.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't get what they do with those fucking pin-ups. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it's a bit like, we haven't got an advert, so what do we do? A really shitty screen grab. That's what we'll do. And it's just a bit naff, isn't it?
Well, it's only the last page. There's other stuff in there that's good.
True. Talking about that, what was your favourite thing in the entire issue, Colin?
I think Flashback, the cat comic strip at the start with Nigel Kitching's absolutely amazing artwork.
What about you, Carl?
Agreed. I think that's the best bit. And the story is great as well.
I mean, for me, I've actually put both comic strips.
Yeah.
And I think that's a cheat, to be honest with you. But it's my fucking podcast. Out of the two, I think it is the cat one that just pips it. But both comic strips were fucking ace.
Yeah.
And it really does make a huge difference that they're doing two original comic strips now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the most meh thing of the issue? Go to you first, Carl.
Oof. I'll say, trying not to pick like the character profiles. It might even be Lister's application form.
Oh, I liked that.
Oh, no. Holograms. Holograms has just gone downhill.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's becoming less and less. I mean, it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't even seem like they're genuine letters.
Yeah. What about you, Colin?
I think it's the androids one, this issue. I quite like the two in the previous one, but this one I don't think worked. But we'll see how it continues, and hopefully it gets better again. Because it could be just a blip.
I'm going to agree with Carl. I thought the holograms was really fucking irritating. Like I said.
Fair.
Right, I think what we're going to do is we're going to all promote one of our podcasts in detail. Colin first.
Okay, well, okay, we're free with this month's issue then, which is, because we're talking about magazines, it's kind of related. If you're the kind of person that used to read music magazines like Kerrang, NME, Metal Hammer, you know, Q, that kind of thing, they used to have free CDs every now and again, and we used to pick up on loads of really cool music from them. And basically, it's a podcast where me and my best mate Ian and a different guest each month, which both of these fine gentlemen here with me have guested on previously.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we go and listen to a CD and find the horrors and delights within. And the best episodes tend to be the ones where there's a good mixture of brilliant stuff and absolute fucking dog shit. And that's free with this month's issue, which you can find by searching for it on podcast apps and on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all of those places.
Carl, plug a podcast.
Oh, well, at the time of this going out, I won't have any other podcasts. So I may have been launching a new one by that point. I've got a couple of irons in the fire, but I'm just waiting to see what's going to stick. But I will have something, maybe.
You are an enigma, Carl.
I'm an enigma wrapped inside a puzzle, wrapped inside a conundrum.
Yes, you are. For me, my current podcast project is called Chucky Vision. Yes, that's a pun, and yes, I'm fucking proud of it. It is a podcast with, similar to this in a lot of ways, where we do a big, deep dive into the Child's Play franchise of horror films and the new TV show Chucky, looking at it episode by episode, having looked at the films. And after that, we've got plans to watch weird-ass Chucky paraphernalia stuff. And yeah, if you like horror, if you like Chucky and Child's Play, check out Chucky Vision at Chucky Vision on Twitter.
That's a tongue twister. If you like Chucky, check out Chucky Vision at Chucky Vision on Twitter.
I mean, I thought I did it rather well, actually.
You did it very well, Mark, yes.
So thank you for listening to Shipwrecked and Comatose in this 7 in 7 week once again, where we're looking at the Smegazines. We're back tomorrow with, funnily enough, the next issue after this one. So until then,
okay, so hear me out. We do a special where we cast our own American pilot.
That could work.
No.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.